Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 3 on the Abstract Podcast. Today, we're coming at you talking about a new giveaway that we're doing, some fast food brackets again, how to write a Valentine's Day letter, and a commercial from the Super Bowl. Eagle Radio has a new social media manager, which is super exciting. We're actually doing a giveaway this week. There's a $25 Chick-fil-A gift card that is up for grabs. And the good news is, folks, the good news for you all is that we're not that popular, so we don't have that many followers. There's only like 90 people who follow us on social media. And so you could enter to win this giveaway, and there's actually a pretty high chance that you could win. I think it's a $25 gift card to Chick-fil-A, and we've been approved for like 4 more giveaways after that. So keep your eye out for that. It's on Instagram, TFC Eagle Radio. On Instagram, you could win a lot of good stuff.
Can we enter our own podcast giveaway?
I don't know. That would raise an ethical question.
$25 Chick-fil-A gift card.
If we win, we'll deal with that dilemma. All right, so to start off today, we're going to be talking about the fast food bracket that we started talking about last episode. So we're moving over to the right side of the bracket for round 2.
Good segue, because Chick-fil-A and Del Taco are up first.
That's right. Chick-fil-A is up at the – Chick-fil-A is ranked
Chick-fil-A's
number 1.
Chick-fil-A is a 1 seed. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I thought this one was unfortunate because it's Chick-fil-A and Del Taco. And I actually really, really like Del Taco. I think it's even maybe better than Taco Bell. Have you been to Del Taco?
I've never been to Del Taco, but
they have
some,
a strawberry
that's
lemonade
high praise to
for
be
a dollar.
Taco Bell.
A dollar for strawberry lemonade with real strawberries.
Okay.
All right. Who you got?
I mean, I got Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's I do
fair.
Like a good taco, though.
All right. I think Chick-fil-A could be going deep in the bracket. All right. Up next is, actually, do you know how to pronounce this one?
Qdoba?
Yeah, Qdoba and Sonic. I actually drove past a Qdoba, I think, yesterday. Unless that was a dream.
Yeah, I've never eaten there. I don't even know if I've hardly ever seen one.
Yeah, I guess I have to pick Sonic. I think Sonic is cool because they still use the rollerblades.
That, and then they have these boneless wings. What are they? Sweet and spicy Asian chili boneless wings.
That's fantastic. A great flavor. They're basically just chicken nuggets, but they're wings. But they're so good.
Dipping sauce.
Up next is Jack in the Box versus Checkers/Rallies. This is the 4 and 5 seed.
I don't know. They should
have
been.
It's hard because I've never really eaten a Checkers Rallies.
Or Jack in the Box, really.
Oh, I actually do like Jack in the Box.
I like Jack in the Box the 1 or 2 times I've eaten there. So I guess I'll go with Jack in the Box.
All right. And Hardee's versus Long John Silver's. Long John Silver's is like that mysterious fast food restaurant. No one knows how they're still around or if anyone actually eats there. But they're up at the 7 seed.
Or if it's actually fish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Hardee's is an easy win.
I guess.
Me
I don't actually love Hardee's, but I
See,
guess.
Yeah,
I'll...
I do. They got their thick burger and their breakfast Frisco.
Okay.
I also live like, a minute from Hardee's, so.
So it's more geographical.
I also have a great coffee, so there's that.
Number 1 seed on the bottom right side is Subway
matchup.
Versus Cookout at the 8 seed. I'm going to take Cookout on this one.
I'm going to the upset. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been to a restaurant where you get more food cheaper than Cookout.
And it's decent, too.
Yeah, my wife would disagree with you. She hates Cookout. She thinks the food is disgusting.
I mean, it's not great, but it does the job.
It's a good restaurant to put on like college campuses or in college towns because that's what we're looking for.
Absolutely.
Up next, we have Five Guys Burgers and Fries versus Bojangles.
That's a Five Guys win every day.
Yeah. Bojangles is.
Bojangles,
Their biscuits are okay.
Yeah.
Pretty good. All right. Chipotle versus Zaxby's at the 4 and 5 seed. I don't know how these were 4 and 5 seed, but those are 2 solid choices.
Oh, really? See, for me, it's a blowout. Chipotle doesn't even hold a thread to it. I do not like Chipotle.
Why not?
Okay. Full disclaimer, I ate there one time, and the burrito I had, I was unimpressed by. You give me hot and honey mustard, boneless wings and things at Zaxby's every day.
Oh, my goodness.
Over that
I would definitely pick Chipotle over Zaxby's. Zaxby's is just overpriced, in my opinion. It's, like, not as good as Chick-fil-A, but more expensive. That's my opinion.
In my opinion, it's better than Chick-fil-A, so I'll pay the extra dollar.
All right. And the last matchup we have, KFC at the 2 seed versus Moe's. The 7 seed. Who you got?
I'm going with Colonel Sanders on this one.
Yeah, I've only eaten at Moe's like once, but I think...
Yeah, I've never eaten there.
I feel like that's really how we decided all the picks. I've never eaten there. I do love KFC fried chicken, so I don't know. We just got a Moe's in Seneca. I'll get back with you after we try that out. All right, so I actually went onto the website recently. We'll have to see like what the crowd voted and then what our next matchups actually are. So we'll have to get back on that one.
That's perfect. And what a great segue from fast food to talking about Valentine's.
Mm, absolutely.
So by the time, well, this episode will end right before Valentine's Day, so we are going to prime you.
Luckily, we'll get this out into the world before That's Valentine's right. Day.
So rest easy, my friends. So it's time to start writing that Valentine's letter. And this is coming from a person who is self-described as very bad at writing letters, specifically love letters. And I think this is a empirically verifiable fact, if you would look at my record. So record. Anyway, we'll have some fun with this. So there was an email going around. I get Jonathan Rogers, his weekly emails.
Yeah, The Habit, right?
The Habit, yes. And
which,
he's a fantastic writer.
Ironically, The Habit is a fast food restaurant out on the West Coast.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
What's the burger joint West Coast that's really good? I like In-N-Out. In-N-Out.
Yeah.
I like In-N-Out a lot.
I think that was on the bracket last week. Sorry.
Oh, really? Oh.
The weekly writing of Jonathan Rogers is The Habit. Jonathan Rogers has a PhD in English. He is a good writer.
Yes. And so this is actually, he gives a few little tips for those of you who are looking for keys to writing a good love letter.
Yeah, I mean,
for
this,
Valentine's.
This applies to, it's not just if you're single, because once you're married, you still need to be
That's right.
writing those letters.
In fact, maybe even more so. Okay, so he says, there's two counterintuitive truths about writing.
I can't wait.
Which he says you need to know first before you enter into the writing stage. Key number one is that it's hard to evoke emotion when you speak of emotion directly.
Okay.
And Javen, I'm going to defer to you on a lot of this because you're the resident writer here. And number two, which I thought this was a really good one, your feelings aren't original. In fact, they're the least original aspects of your experience. We all feel the same emotions.
Hmm.
And so to tease out a little bit what he's talking about. So I think his first point, it's hard to evoke emotion when you speak of emotion directly. He's basically saying, well, and it tags with his second point. I think he's kind of saying that if you write about your emotions, it's not going to get very far and it's going to turn into sap pretty quick.
Right. So writing about your emotions, what would that sound like? That would be like,
trying to describe how I feel.
Right,
about
like I have
you.
This feeling yeah. for you that I want to describe. So my feeling of love for you yeah. is just
out the wazoo. Like, see, that's when you're gonna fall back
right,
on the cliche and cliches can be fine, but basically saying like you're having the same emotion that Saint Augustine had when he wrote, you know, his letters to his wife back in the third century.
Yes,
it's not a new emotion.
Her name. I can't remember.
All I can think of is his mom. His mom is Monica.
Yeah, Monica was... Yeah, okay.
Anyway,
yeah.
Doesn't matter here. But anyway, so he's saying, so don't just write about your emotion because your emotions are not original to you. Everybody has their emotions. What's unique to you is the context with which you feel them in. So he says, expressing and evoking strong emotion is the whole point of a love letter, a love poem. And your beloved deserves something as original as he or she is. So don't write about emotion. Instead, you love letter writer, do this. He says, while it's hard to evoke emotion by speaking directly of emotion, your chances of evoking emotion improve greatly when you depict the scene or situation that originally evoked the emotion in question.
Yes.
Remember, in real life, emotion is often or usually attached to memory.
Yes, I think he nails this. This is so true. Because if you just say, my love for you is, and then you go on a long
as
string.
As big as the ocean blue.
With seven Oxford commas.
Yeah.
It's just still like, But what you want to do is re-evoke an experience that you shared, because that person has a reference point for that emotion. And they'd be like, oh, wow, I felt that at that point too. And look, this person remembers it.
Right.
There it is.
So he says, when you write that Valentine, then consider starting with a memory and write about the specifics of a memory in concrete terms. And so if you want to speak directly about the emotions that you associate with the memory, that's fine, but don't expect the emotional language to carry the freight.
Mm.
That's what the memory will do. So I'm going to read a quick example from Jane Kenyon.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's called Coming Home at Twilight in Late Summer. We turned into the drive and gravel flew up from the tires like sparks from a fire. So much to be done, the unpacking, the mail, and papers.
Okay, I'm going to break in. Is this a love letter?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, we're getting there. The grass needed mowing. We climbed stiffly out of the car. The shutoff engine ticked as it cooled. And then we noticed the pear tree, the limbs so heavy with fruit, they nearly touched the ground. We went out to the meadow. Our steps made black holes in the grass. And we each took a pear and ate and were grateful. And that's the end.
Was that a good example?
He says it's not flashy. No. And he said it's not going to find its way onto a greeting card. But he said it's a love poem from one woman to one man, and it's pretty potent stuff, he said. Okay. He said, this is what intimate poetry looks like. Here's something that you and I experienced. No one else was there to see it, and I was paying attention. So he's saying that's what's communicated in that.
And so, there were pears.
Yeah.
Speaking of Augustine, they were pears.
Trying to make that connection.
The pear tree. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. So I think this is actually a good example. It sounded super bland to me. That was like... What is this? The beginning of a horror story or something? But to the person who experienced that event, it probably made a lot of sense. And all those things probably evoked a strong imagery in the mind, emotional connection to the experience, all that kind of thing. Even though, so if something that would have made a lot of sense to me as a reader who wasn't there was this person talking about their emotions and what they were feeling in the moment. What he does is he transcends that.
Right.
Or she. I don't actually know.
It's a her. Yep.
Right. By writing about the experience.
Yeah. Because he says when you start with memory and experience, then originality will take care of itself.
I'm just imagining all the people we're helping so much. Oh, I imagine some 15, 16-year-olds out there especially. Maybe some older 52-year-old guys who need a little help in this department. This is good stuff.
So here's a little how-to he breaks down then. Start with things, not metaphors, because things are metaphors. So it's that same idea. The thing or the scene is the metaphor for the emotion that's carried with that scene. So tell it unique as only you can tell it to your wife.
Mm.
So you may feel all these feelings of warmth and enthusiasm and love and whatever else towards your wife, but describe
them.
Or husband
or girlfriend.
Or husband or girlfriend, yes.
Person you're trying to
win over
right.
by this love letter. Yes. So there's a lot carrying on this. There's a lot of weight on this right here. But he's saying start with concrete things and memories and move from that angle, because those things can be metaphors to open up the avenue of the emotive for the person you're writing to.
Yeah, I mean, I think even if it was like, even if you were trying to describe kind of the opposite, how angry you were at someone,
right?
You wouldn't want to just sit there and describe your anger. You would want to give examples. Right. This is the way in which you provoked me so deeply, and you would want to give examples. Yeah,
and tell a specific thing. So, all right, so a couple prompts now. One prompt would be to complete the following sentence. Remember that time we and you start from there, and you start down memory lane a little bit there. Another prompt would be to consider an inanimate object that you associate with your beloved. What does it remind you of? And Javen, I thought about putting you on the spot about an inanimate object that comes to your mind when you think of your wife, but I won't do that.
Oh, no, sure. That you was well, no, I don't think it's that you're comparing your beloved to an inanimate object. But so one example for us could be cranes. I make these little origami cranes, and that's something that she makes them as well. Mine are better for the record. And so you could say like,
right, you're associating.
It's a shared inanimate object.
Yeah,
right?
Okay, and third, a prompt you could go with is, what is something you have never known or perhaps a place you never would have been if you had not ever known your beloved?
Or beloved to be.
Or beloved to be. Or hope to be beloved. But in that case, I would recommend not writing this letter and starting somewhere else first.
Yes. Too deep.
Too deep. Too fast.
All right. So the final word that Rogers gives us in the last bullet point here is, it's not about you. Your goal is to say, here's what I think about you, not here's what I want you to think about me. I think that's a good word.
I'll
also
word.
Just say, in my limited experience, don't get too superfluous. Don't go crazy on adjectives or length. You want to keep it concise. You want to keep it to the point. Less is more.
Yep. And I would definitely say that with his points about if you go off and try to describe and find new ways to describe your emotion, you're going to run dry. because there's only so many emotions that go around, and there's only so many adjectives that go around to describe your emotion.
Another good example, I think, is quotes. Yeah. Or not quotes, yep. but steal from other people. Steal from Shakespeare, steal from a song you both know, and then just put some little quotation marks around it, but like you wrote it there. It's still yours.
Yep.
You just...
One of my favorite quotes of marriage or even like to give your wife is from the 5th century, I believe. So, or 4th century from St. Chrysostom.
Absolutely.
But anyway, so borrow a little bit this Valentine's Day. But anyway, hope that's helpful to
you. May
you
be successful in every endeavor.
And do not share what impact this didn't or did not have on the quality of your Valentine's date. Okay, well, that's a great segue, I guess, to talk about the middle.
That's right. So hopefully, no, I shouldn't say hopefully, but probably a lot of us watch the Super Bowl on...
fairly dull, but
Sunday. It's always on Sunday. Yeah, pretty dull. So I think actually
kind of a blowout,
the more interesting parts for me were trying to understand the halftime show and then a couple commercials that were played during the Super Bowl was actually probably the most interesting part. And I really enjoyed the food that we ate that night. We weren't actually going to talk about this, but I would like to ask you, what did you make? Did you see the halftime show?
Yes, I did.
What did you, like, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, the, I think it's a pretty low bar, honestly. The comments that I've heard from a lot of people is, well, no one was naked.
Yeah,
so
yeah, exactly.
That's a plus.
I know. That's that was kind of, I mean, that was kind of my big takeaway. It's like, but yeah, I mean, it was just kind of bizarre. I wasn't exactly sure what was going on.
Right.
And I don't know. It was fine, but I didn't, like, for how extravagant halftime shows get sometimes, it was kind of, okay, cool. Whatever.
My impression was that there was a lot. I bet this guy, The Weeknd, I don't know his name, but, you know, I kind of wonder if he feels like he really put together an impressive spectacle packed with meaning and nuance, and probably, like, no one got it.
Right.
That would be my kind of guess.
Yeah. Because I was trying to figure out, like, I wonder what, like, it was almost like a house of mirrors at one point in time.
And then it was, like, a lot of chaos.
Yeah,
lots
of chaos.
People just running around and crashing into each other.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was trying to evoke emotion from protests and riots and mobbing. That was kind of the what it brought to my mind. And then there was also the whole element where a lot of people thought that these dancers had jock straps on their heads, which was actually not the case. But even my one professor... made that comment. I was like, well, no, I don't think so. But I think that had to do with, so this weekend, did you see the thing with his facial reconstruction surgery? It was for a music video, right? So I think he like did this, and I shouldn't even talk about it. I don't even know. But leading up to it, he had this, I guess it was like a fake surgery. So he had his head all like bandaged up, like leading up to this, and kind of like bloody and all bruised. But apparently that was fake. Because then, anyway, for the music video that this was all leading up to, his face looks super reconstructed and like just like someone is kind of at, you know, not in the prime of their life and trying to make their face look better with reconstruction, but just way overdoes it. Like huge, like cheeks jutting out, lips bulging. And it's just like, ugh. It's like, you know, that person who's trying to look so much better, but it just like looks awful.
Okay. I didn't notice that.
So that's what he was. No, that was for the music video.
Oh, okay.
And so then now when he comes out for the Super Bowl halftime, he does not look like that anymore. But all of the dancers are wearing these quote-unquote jock straps on their head, which I think was a reference to the bandaging.
Okay.
So it made me wonder, was the comment that he was trying to make something about all these people running around trying to look better than they are, but there's bandages? I don't know. I didn't quite follow it.
Yeah, I didn't quite follow it either. Honestly, I just thought they needed to wear masks because of how many there were, and they tried to make him look to where it fit in more with the music video. That's all I thought was going on. So I didn't read into it that much.
I heard someone say, that was interesting. I would have much rather just heard Tom Petty. And I resonated with that.
Yeah, or you two or someone. Yeah, that was kind of my takeaway. It was just kind of...
Or Prince. We could have just re-aired the Prince one. All right, so anyway... That was kind of a sidetrack. The thing I wanted to ask about.
One last thing about the halftime show that I thought was fantastic. I saw someone share in I'm gonna lose it now. I think it's in the VeggieTales movie Jonah. they have like these lines of choirs.
Singing. In the whale. It's in the belly of the whale.
Yeah. And I just saw someone tagged Phil Fish. Totally is robbing
totally
you.
Totally ripped
right
you
here.
Off. No, that's
this
so
has been
true.
Done before. And it honestly, it was hilarious, like the parallels, because they actually looked pretty similar.
Yeah, weren't they dressed in white too? Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
And they're like swaying back and
yeah,
forth.
Yeah, and they're swaying back and forth.
Jonah was a prophet. Yeah. That's such a good point. Oh, man. Anyway, so then about, I don't know, probably 3/4 of the way through the game or something, this commercial airs.
And it, did it only air once? I was trying to remember. I only saw
it
one time.
Yeah, it was only one time. Yeah, okay. Came on. I think actually all commercials, I only remember seeing any of them once. There may have been
I saw one or two a couple times, I think.
Yeah. This was one of those that, like, it's obviously a company or an organization crafting a message. And it's not that they're not trying to do advertising, because they certainly are, but it's like they're speaking what they think and then they just tag their name on the end mm-hmm. of it. It's not like a Corona commercial where you got people on the beach drinking Coronas and it's all about Corona the whole time. This yeah. was more like, you know, they're it's almost more philosophical.
Yeah.
And then it's just a little Jeep logo at the end. So kind of explain what this commercial was.
So it centers around it's voiced over by Bruce Springsteen, and he's featured.
Which is a very
in
interesting
it.
Choice.
Yes, and so it's set in rural Kansas, and so it's kind of overcast, a little grayscale, a little bit,
mm-hmm.
And it's the chapel that marks. I forget what the exact marker of that chapel is.
Apparently, it's supposed to be represent the very middle of the country.
Okay, yeah.
So
yeah.
I think as far as north and south and east and west, like if you were to draw a line where those two crossed. Is this chapel in Kansas,
yeah.
which was kind of remarkable to me. I didn't know that existed. It was interesting.
Yeah.
And it's also like the size of this studio. I mean, it
yeah,
was
it's very
tiny.
Small. Yeah.
And so then you see, and so then the whole commercial is Bruce Springsteen doing a voiceover
mm-hmm.
and sitting
and
in the chapel and driving a Jeep.
Yeah. So he sits in the chapel, he's journaling, he's praying in the chapel. And yeah, then he drives a Jeep, he sticks on a cowboy hat and leaves at the end. It's basically the gist of it. And it sparked a lot of feedback and no small share of hot takes. So let's just talk through and kind of outline, because you typically the thing I thought that was interesting is the amount of reaction on both the right and left ends of spectrum about it.
Yeah. So what have you been seeing as when you say right and left? The only reaction I've been seeing is from like my evangelical friends on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know there was really backlash on both sides. What would you say about that?
So on the right, I would kind of say the backlash is, I'll start on the left. So the left is basically, a lot of Springsteen's thing was kind of a vague call to unity a little bit and to unite as a country. We're on common ground kind of sentiment and there was some backlash on the left saying that we can't just preach a message of unity without first reconciling with, you know, like January 6th, with what happened at the Capitol, with, you know, with Donald Trump as president. There's too many important things to be saying that message, yet there has to be first justice before you can move to unity. So I saw that some more on the left side. On the right side, well, what did you see more? Because you said you saw more on the right side.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I would say the right side, but the evangelical side.
Okay. Because the right side was, I would say, more like, it's kind of different. I don't know. I think there was a lot of nuance there with what the pushback was, but some of like, oh, are we going to call this Christian nationalism too? Because there was a flag and a cross in the same place. Kind of like, we're going to keep going down this rabbit trail kind of thing.
Then I guess that makes sense. I mean,
you're going to have a figure like Bruce Springsteen coming in there, and we're going to have to be told we have to unify. And what that means is basically leaving our beliefs and our convictions at the door. So I saw that a little bit.
Interesting.
Because,
I mean, the symbolism was very, well, I don't know, it was all very tied together. I mean, you have the cross, you have the state of Kansas. You have Bruce Springsteen,
chapel,
work boots,
yeah.
sitting in
cowboy hat,
cowboy hat, Jeep,
kinda
dirt roads,
kind of grayscale.
I mean,
yeah.
to me, this is very much along the lines of kind of like Southern culture.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, the pushback that I seen was people saying, like, this is Christian nationalism in a commercial. But what I did was I went ahead and reached out to listeners, and I said, hey, this was an interesting commercial. We want to talk about it, and I'd love to hear some of your thoughts. And so I just want to read down through and kind of just see what they said about it. Because there was really mixed reactions to what people thought.
Mm.
So Vernon says, in theory, this is great. We all stand together and become reunited. Unfortunately, most people don't want to hear this coming from Bruce Springsteen, who was very public with his disdain for President Trump and now wants people to be reunited. I personally don't believe this country will ever be reunited. The wickedness is so great, and as Christians, we shouldn't try to be tolerant of everything that happens. He quotes Matthew 24:9, then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Rich says, I resonate with the message of hope and togetherness that comes out from this commercial. The images and the words make sense. From a messaging standpoint, they did themselves no favors by staying with the old man. That's interesting. Both of them pointed out the use of Springsteen.
Well, I think he's saying more that it was a solitary man. And that,
oh, staying with one old man. Because
I saw that
man.
Pushback at several different places. Yeah, like, yeah. He's out in the middle of isolation, calling for unity, not having to work it out in the presence of community. So I saw that.
Yeah, no,
I think that's more of the point he's making.
That's a good point. Why would you stay solo while pushing for a theme of unity? That's a little suspect. The target audience is middle America because the image is rural, small town adventure. So it grabs me because I still have a lot of rural blood in me. About the only way I see this middle call for unity actually playing out well is if people, singles, couples, and families, intentionally practice hospitality and do the work of listening to and loving those who are very different from them. Alvin says, I like the mournful tone that comes through the music. It seems appropriate during a time when we have lost so much. Beyond that, the message calls us to meet in the middle. To me, that means acknowledging that our country is full of people who are different from me, that their desires, freedoms, and status bears as much worth as my own. We have to be willing to lay down our weapons and step outside of the fortifications we have built around our fears in order to meet in the middle. Crucially, we can still bring our values along, but we need to leave room for others to bring their values as well. And then I want to read two more, and then I want us to kind of give our own takes on this. Sorry, I had to pull this up. It's not in the document. Right here. Okay. All right, my friend Gabriel says, upon watching this Super Bowl commercial, my initial desire was to get in my car and drive straight to that chapel in Lebanon, Kansas. My fatigue from dissent and my desire for peace made this presentation quite appealing. I appreciate the unbiased mention against the tension, quote, between red and blue, between servant and citizen, as well as the specific equality statement of freedom belonging to all, whoever you are, wherever you're from. I believe the gentle call for unity could easily be heard, made clear by the lack of insults and anger that often drowns out other originally well-intended attempts. I have a great appreciation for Springsteen and the collaboration of this ad, and my lasting thought is the same as my initial. I desire to drive to that chapel in the pursuit of unity. Which I thought was a really interesting take as well. Mm-hmm. And then one more. And I left this one for last because I actually think that I probably agreed with this one the most. But I really want to hear what you think about this too.
Mm-hmm.
So this person emailed or messaged me back with a response, but then I guess thought a little bit more about it and then sent me this. After thinking about it some more, I have further thoughts. I think the reason it didn't make sense, obviously they thought it didn't make sense, was because they had this concept of finding, quote, middle ground, and they were really committed to it because they liked the imagery of the church in the center of the USA. But I think in their heads, finding middle ground was the same as finding common ground. And this person says, but that's not true. For example, if a pro-choice person and a pro-life person find middle ground, that would be something like allowing abortion for the first half of the pregnancy but not the second half. It's the middle ground of these two positions, but it doesn't reconcile them at all. Such a solution would make both sides feel like they lost. Common ground, on the other hand, would be something like we should create institutions to support mothers who want to keep their babies but don't feel like they have the resources. This is a common cause that both sides could get behind. I think that the nonsensical moments of this commercial came from trying to conflate middle ground with common ground. For instance, the commercial tried to convey that freedom is common ground, something that both sides need and deserve. Cool. That makes sense. But trying to conflate it with middle ground, you end up with something nonsensical about finding freedom between finding the middle between freedom and fear. And then she also continued to go on, but I thought that was a really interesting take.
Yeah.
I'll go first, kind of give mine.
Yeah.
the Gabriel's response, I really resonated with that. Like, I'll be honest, when I seen that commercial, I was standing in the living room. I think the TV was off to my right a little bit. And I actually kind of got tears in my eyes. Like, I was like, wow, like, that was a really well-written, beautiful 45 seconds of video.
Yeah.
I really like Springsteen. The camera work is really nice. And I've really felt that tension about, like, the middle. That's maybe another conversation, but I think we all tend to see ourselves as the person in the middle with crazy people on both sides. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I know I do that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the only one standing here in the middle and
yeah.
there's a bunch of people around me. But, like, I think – and maybe that's why it was so emotive, was because it was saying, like, it was one person sitting in a church
yeah.
in the middle, right? So it was very emotive. And like Gabriel said, like, when I first heard that, I was like, yes, like, this is so good. But the more I thought about it, I guess the more I was actually a little bit disturbed. And, you know, maybe it's just a quip – and I know there are a lot of people who have different opinions about this, but the fact that, you know, the imagery was a chapel and it was a cross.
Mm-hmm.
And I did take it to be saying that the way of Jesus could be this middle ground between red and blue where we come together. And I don't think that's the way of Jesus. I don't mm-hmm. think the way of Jesus is halfway between anything.
Yeah. Okay, that's super fascinating because I would say – my response, okay, so I was kind of like you. My initial emotive response was, I like Springsteen. The imagery was beautiful. The background music, beautiful. And it was very emotive in that way. And I liked it. And I think I generally still do. Like, it was well done. But I think a couple things. One's kind of been mentioned already, but the notion that to find middle ground, like middle ground being virtuous in and of itself. Like, if we just get to this place of middle ground. But it doesn't really do a job of actually teasing out, like, an embodied form of that at all, which it can't do extensively in a just a 45-second commercial. But along to that point that was just made, that finding ways to partner together in common goals and things we're moving towards as a society versus just having this kind of vague existential middle that we all adhere to or align with. So that was one thought I had. I wrestled back and forth with trying to think about if I thought that there was a lot of Christian nationalism coming through.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I feel twofold. For one, I can see how the imagery of conflating a chapel, an American flag, and a cross would carry that connotation. But on the other hand, I was thinking it is a landmark of the United States.
The chapel?
The chapel.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Therefore, it's going to be marked.
Yes.
By the United States. So
I don't know. Because the church is an institution
right.
that has been in America since its founding.
Right.
Yeah.
And the other critique that I'm still thinking through that I saw some is so he's making this call for middle ground, but he's doing it with the kind of iconography of a specific maybe grouping of those people who are looking for middle ground. So what I mean by that is that there's a, for the people that resonated with the icons in that commercial, they do not have to travel far to get to middle ground
mm-hmm.
and everybody else has to travel far to get to that middle ground. And so I think that's kind of fair. But again, generally I liked it and I thought it was well done. Some of the stuff I thought maybe was, you know, I didn't take quite a cynical approach as some who said that this was a complete exploitation of Jeep to use kind of themes of, you know, serious themes of unity. And that's it's complete capitalistic, nationalistic blasphemy. I'm not there because I think Jeep was actually trying to send something meaningful and maybe do something meaningful. And they got to attach their brand to it. But I mean, I'm sure there's money involved as well, too. But
yeah.
I just would take probably a little bit less cynical view on that.
Emily finished up her comment by saying, I think the commercial could have avoided this by focusing on common ground instead of middle ground, but then they couldn't have used the cool imagery of the little church in the middle of the lower 48. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think this is a good point. Finding common ground is not necessarily the same as finding middle ground.
Right.
And I think maybe that's an important distinction to make because the church will always be a place, or I think it should always be a place, where different people from different perspectives, different opinions, different backgrounds are worshiping together. And it is a common place.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it's just in the middle of whatever the two extremes are at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, because that middle will move around. Middle moves around with extremes and therefore can't necessarily be pinned down as virtuous or unvirtuous. And so a little bit more nuance. But again, that's difficult to do in a 45-second commercial.
Especially if you're trying to impress people. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Again, though, I mean, you can't go wrong with you know, Bruce Springsteen's gravelly voice coming through, which I saw some people were even kind of upset about that, about how it made him look like this haggard old man who hasn't worked the full day of work. I mean, he kind of openly brags about that he, you know, that he found a way to write songs instead of having to do hard labor.
I do know that, like, for a decade, the E Street Band struggled mightily. So
sleeping in cars.
He might not have punched a clock for anybody, but it's not that he hasn't worked.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. He just found maybe a little bit of a different avenue to work in.
All right, so I'm going to keep thinking about that. I think it's an interesting imagery and interesting ideas coming to play there. Do you have anything you want to recommend for our listeners before we head out of here? I'll start with one. A friend sent me trying to find it here. A friend sent me a song. I was like, "Hey, thought of you and check out this song." And it was really, I just thought it was an amazing song. Do you know Remedy Drive?
Yeah.
Remedy Drive, they had that song back in the day, All Along.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Great piano ballad. I always love that one.
But oh, yeah.
They recently put out this album called Imago Amor, loosely translated Image of Love. My Latin and Spanish coming together there. But there's a song on there called Using My Name. It's the eighth track. And I really encourage you guys to go and listen to it. It really talks to what we've been talking about here for the last half hour. And while you give your recommendations, I'm actually going to look up the lyrics, and I want to read just a bit from it.
Yeah. Trying to think here real quick off the top of my head. One song that is, if you're willing to be, it's super sad, but one that I thought was really well written is by Brandi Carlile. And it's called, By the Way I Forgive You, I think is what it's called. Hmm. Actually, I have it right here. Every Time I Hear That Song, that's what it's called. That one that one's really sad. But that one's pretty good. But other than that, I've been pretty busy with some other work and hadn't had just a ton of time to read a bunch right now. So I'm a little dry on that area.
For sure. All right, so I want to close with this. This is Remedy Drive, and the song is called Using My Name. And I guess it's kind of from God's perspective, if you're allowed to do that as an artist. It says, "For your rights and privilege, you trade prophetic witness. For economy and prosperity, you have betrayed me with your kisses. When justice is in famine and when righteousness is starved, you bow to the altars of mammon and monuments of Mars. My eyes are filled with fire. In my hand, I hold seven stars. You pledge allegiance to this land, but not my country from afar. You're using my name in vain. You're using my name. You're using my name in vain." Yeah, I would
recommend. Is this a new album?
Yeah, it's a new album. Yeah, okay. I'm meaning to listen through the whole thing, but I was just really blown away by that song. I thought it was really, really great. I think that wraps it up here for us, episode 3. Make sure to go and check out the giveaway. We'd love for you guys to follow us, and we'd love to give you some Chick-fil-A dollars.
And we'd also love if you have something that you want to throw our way, article, recommendation, or something like that you think would be interesting to talk about, please do.
Absolutely.
With that said, we'll close off for this week. Hope you have a great week. Thanks for tuning in.